Wrestling Soup is intended for a mature audience. We like to use naughty words.
Wrestling Soup, I am Anthony Missionary Thomas. He is Kevin Castle.
What's up, man?
Not much, man. Still recovering from my long trip up to DC and back.
Yeah, how was it?
It was good, man. It was actually a lot more fun than I was expecting it to be. Not that I was expecting it to be bad in any way or anything like that, but, you know, it was about 12 hours to get to DC from Chicago. I decided to drive.
Oh, wow.
And it was about 12 hours back too. So probably about 14. It was actually about 14 to 16 hours back, but my brother decided to drive a little bit too. DC is really weird.
Oh, it's the first time you were there?
Yeah, I've never been there before.
Did you say you went with your brother? Did you say?
Yeah.
Oh, you took. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we went to AwesomeCon. It was Lee Sanders and Julian Cannon that were there, and we did a panel and stuff like that. We talked a little bit about Marvel. We talked about some wrestling. You know, it wasn't bad. We had a few heads up in there. The event was nice. Fine. Yeah. We did it at Friday at 6:30. Is when we did.
Yeah, I saw the picture you guys posted. That's a good picture, you three guys.
Oh, wow. Thanks.
I complimented it. I was almost physically attracted to all three.
Well, Julian is a sexy beast. Come on.
All three of you guys look good. I actually said that when I saw the picture. I said, that's a good picture of the three of you guys. It was a nice picture. It really was. See pictures, and you're like, but that picture came out good.
Yeah, I lost a few pounds.
You did. You look good.
Some people all you guys up. Look They're good. Like,
you,
man,
Lee,
yeah.
Julian.
You lost some weight from C2E2, and I'm like, yeah, a little bit. I think I lost most of my weight when I was in PA. I don't know. I just did. PA was wonderful. Even though it was in the middle of the fucking pandemic, like, I could breathe better. Dude, it was even funny driving back through PA. Like, we took the back roads, and I was going up the mountains and the forests and shit. We were hanging out with the Amish. Like, it was a whole thing, like horse and buggies and all these small towns. And it was amazing because going through PA, it's like you can just breathe so much better. And we get back to Chicago, and even my brother's like, ugh, this city stinks. And you could just feel
literally stinks.
Oh, yeah. You could just feel the pollution. You can, like, on your skin and everything. It's you don't really realize those things until they happen, like, so fast in the span of a day, how light and airy and how good Pennsylvania smells versus the grime, oily air that Chicago has. It's just night and day.
I didn't realize I thought the Midwest air quality is better than the Northeast.
Though. Yeah, but Chicago's a metropolis, man. I mean, millions of people and shit. It's not the same. Like, yeah, if I was out in Peoria or something like that, it'd be a different story. But Chicago's kind of rough when it comes to the fog, the smog. But, dude, the actual trip was fine when we went up there and stuff like that. First off, fuck gas prices. Fuck them right in the ass. All of them. Yeah. It was mostly $4.79 down the fucking interstate, which was okay. It was better than Chicago. Chicago's like about $1 to $1.50 more. So at some places now you're paying up to about $7 a gallon when you get downtown.
Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, my car, so basically every time I had to fill up, I had to fill up three times there, three times back, and it was about 85 to fill my tank, about 80, 85 to fill it, 14 and a half gallons,
yeah. You know,
and it was, that sucked. Tolls suck too. Like, Illinois tolls are gruesome. You're spending like $7 here and for the fucking Skyway, and then what, $3, $2 every other fucking 20 blocks or whatever it is. Yeah. Indiana was okay for what it was. Ohio was cheap, you know, until you got to the end. PA was murder, though. You go through fucking PA, man. It was like $50, $60. It was just, yeah.
Yeah, no, even like a road trip like that, you got to factor in all that stuff and all the high prices now. I know sometimes you don't even think about that when you're doing some sort of road trip.
I spent a grand on this trip.
Between, on travel.
Yeah, on well, transport. Okay, so, I mean, close to a grand. I should say, like, probably $800. There and back with all the gas and all the tolls. you know, on the way back, we didn't really hit too many tolls until the end, until we got to Illinois. Cause my whole thing was like, fuck it. Let's enjoy it. Let's take the long way back. Cause I had till Sunday to do it, you know? Yeah. And so I was like, all right, fuck it. We'll take the back roads. And we took the back roads of, like, you know, PA, and we went through Maryland, and we stayed at the worst fucking hotel in the history of hotels.
Oh, my where'd you God. Stay at Best Western?
Yeah. No, it was a Motel 8 run by Ganesh 2. I even threw up a fucking review that the owner immediately had to respond to. There were blood stains on our mattress. There were cockroaches everywhere.
Motel 8.
Oh, yeah, Super 8. Yeah.
You would think that that would be better than Motel 6 because it's two numbers higher. Yeah. Motel 8 is not better than Motel 6. That's right. Motel 11 is pretty good.
Well, nobody talks about Motel 4 anymore. So
that's true.
Yeah. Dude, there was blood stains all on the sheets, cigarette burns everywhere. The towels that they had in the bathroom, like the rags and towels, were used by the person before us because they had shit stains on them.
Oh, God, that's horrible.
There was no shampoo. Like, you know how they give you, like, the travel size soaps and shampoos? Yeah. None of that. There was none of that in the room whatsoever.
I'd pack that stuff with me. Like, I'd go on, like, a store trip and just buy all that stuff and just keep it in a bag. Like, I would kind of think that would be kind of scuzzy in a hotel.
No, because it's usually the disposable shit. So, you know, toothpaste they don't give you. So we had toothpaste and Listerine and shit like that. We had our own deodorant. I've been to some hotels, Kev, where they actually give you, like, little trial sizes of deodorant and shit like that. But yeah. I wasn't going to rely on it. And besides, I like my own brand. Everybody has their own fucking brand.
Yeah, me shit. Too.
But, yeah, dude, this place didn't have any of that. And this was a last-minute thing, too. So I don't know what the fuck was going on in Maryland. But, like, every hotel was just completely booked up. And so we got on the phone. My brother got on the phone and got a hold of the place that we were looking at. And they're like, yeah, we're booked up, but we got an opening at this other place. And he said, fine, whatever. And then she hits him up with the caveat. She's like, yeah, but once you schedule a place here, you can't return it. I'm like, wait, what? Like, I've never heard of that you can't. I mean, maybe it's a common thing. I guess I don't stay in enough hotels, but if a place looks like shit and you run out there screaming, you don't get charged for it. So we were getting charged whether we liked it or not. So we were like, fuck it. We're only going to do a few hours. I just need to catch some Z's, you know, some basic, like I was thinking like 4 hours, which is what I got, just to get in, grab a crash, and then get back on the fucking road. Because I don't mind driving. Believe it or not, I know people hate driving, Kev. I genuinely fucking like driving. Like, if I have an opportunity to choose another profession, I might become a truck driver, as stupid as that sounds. But nice. I like it. I like traveling and shit like that. But anyways, so we get to this fucking place, right? And the first thing you notice is that the hallway smells like stale Clorox bleach and body odor.
Oh, that's a nice scent.
Oh, it was a gross.
A lot of Italians wear that cologne. I believe it's called Aramis.
And so we get in there and, so we're fucking checking out the sheets. He's freaking out. Like, he's like, dude, I don't want to lay on this shit. There's going to be cockroaches in my shit and it's going to get, you know, like, and there was, we stomped out about like 8 or 9 cockroaches.
Jesus Christ. And
I'm like, you know, this is what you do. I'm like, you take your shoes off, you put it underneath the light. They won't go near it. In theory, they won't go near the fucking shoes under the light. He kept his shoes on. So he tried falling asleep with his shoes on. He's like, well, what about our clothes? I'm like, well, what we do is we take our clothes, come back here, leave our luggage in the car. And so we left our luggage in the car, slept the night in our clothes, took our clothes off, put them in a fucking Ziploc bag, threw them in a disposable bag, and then threw that in the back of the fucking truck. And then we just changed into our regular shit, like the new shit, you know, before any roaches could jump on it. And, it was just, it was fucking gross all the way around. And I fucking burned that place. We got the fuck out of there. But the actual trip to DC was a lot of fun. Me and Lee went out afterwards, him and his lovely wife and, you know, me and my bro and stuff like that. We went to, this tapas place. Have you ever done tapas?
Tapas. Yeah. The old, club I worked at, Castle Heights, actually became a tapas, bar for a while.
A tapas bar? No shit. Okay.
Yeah, a tapas bar. Still burned down, but.
Yeah, there we go. We went to the bodega, Spanish tapas and lounge. And League, I think, got something beefy, some beef-based tapas. Because how tapas works is it's like a sharing food, but I guess
that's the whole concept of it. The two owners were from Spain. That's why they opened up a tapas bar in that space. They were both from Vigo, Spain.
Gotcha. And I had some octopus.
Yep. That's fucking, the calamari's big there.
Octopus. Love octopus. And then we had some chicken, some pollo and stuff like that. It was really good. Lee fucking took the bill because he's a champ. So I fucking appreciated the hell out of that. And then we bolted out of there on the way back. Virginia was nice too. Passed through Virginia, never been through Virginia. We stopped off at this weird little log cabin outside of, I don't know why my brain keeps saying Richard Nixon, but it's not Richard Nixon. It's another president. But there's like a town or a memorial to one of the presidents.
Okay.
And we went out there and we had some fucking fish sandwiches. I think he had like a whitefish cod and I had something else. I'm not exactly sure off the top of my head.
Did you have the barracuda?
No. No, we had that. We had some clam chowder, some East Coast clam chowder. Now, I've never had East Coast clam chowder before. And I mean, I've had clam chowder out of the can, but what the fuck is that, right? So the only time I ever had true clam chowder was when me and Joey went to San Francisco for the Stitcher Awards.
Right.
And the San Francisco shit blew his mind. Like, I was impressed that the guy from Boston was like, the San Francisco shit's better. It's better.
Maryland actually has the best seafood. But Virginia, since it's kind of neighboring, they kind of have it good over there too.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've done so much advancement for touring for bands over the years. I know all the places to eat there, all the hotels and all the clubs that are in the vicinity. So I always hear of the stories of the food were more interesting than the clubs the bands actually played.
It's so different. Like, I will say this, traveling through all these different states and going to these mom and pop restaurants, like not going to the fucking ones that are all hipstery and you got to wear a fucking tux and tails and shit to get in. But you know, eating at the mom and pop places, dude, you find some really interesting stories in your food. You know what I mean? Like these people were homemaking, like they would make clam chowder. They were making the chowder by this giant vat by a fire. And when I say that the whole restaurant was a log cabin, the whole restaurant was like a legit fucking log cabin, all made out of wood, shaved off on the sides. The tables were all homemade. Like it was an experience. It was kind of trippy. Out in the middle of fucking nowhere, out in the middle of President Virginia, you know?
So. Yeah, that's how you find a lot of these places. Like you could go to the traditional places, of course, and then there's the known restaurants. But if you go off the beaten path, which a lot of bands do when they tour, and just take a scenic route or something, you'll find some of these spots have some really good food.
Tried a couple of we went to Roy Rogers.
That's all. We haven't had a Roy Rogers in New York.
Had a Roy Rogers ever.
I used to love Roy Rogers.
Did you?
'80s, '80s was a big deal. Roy Rogers.
I think we were in Maryland when we saw the Roy Rogers. It might have been Maryland.
Roy Rogers burgers were pretty good.
Yeah, and then there was another one too, Stuckey's. That's another one.
Stuckey's. That sounds familiar.
Like this isn't Midwest front. Like Midwest doesn't get that. We don't get Roy Rogers. We don't get Stuckey's. But I've heard about them over the years, so we had to try them. We had the Stuckey's breakfast. That was okay.
Nice.
It wasn't great. You know what I mean? Like, the better food stories came from going off the beaten path. But, yeah, the drive itself was long as fuck. Going up the mountains and shit. My brother never been on a mountain before. Like, he was in mountains in Hawaii when he got married. And that was different because it's like,
it's different. Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't have like all the sharp suicide turns that, you know, the East Coast is known for.
those long winding roads. Yeah.
Oh, back and forth, up and down. It was like literally trying to drive on land ocean.
Well, that's in Pennsylvania, especially, right? Or in Virginia, too.
Yeah. Pennsylvania is where the mountains were really heavy.
And Pennsylvania is a lot of those kind of twists and turns.
I love the small towns in the middle of nowhere that don't make sense. So we were going through some of these small towns. And I mean, by small, it's like they probably only have like a few thousand people that live in them, but they had these like little parades up from Memorial Day. And it was a long strip in the backwoods of nothing. And I mean nothing, because there wasn't even traffic lights, Kev. And they had these memorial signs up of all the people in this community's family that have died in the wars. And they put up their pictures and they like up along these posts and stuff. And they told their story. And I'm like, wow. And we're driving like this for a few miles. And I'm like, I can't even imagine them trying to do this shit in Chicago. I mean, don't get me wrong. I thought it was the coolest fucking thing ever. What a cool thing to see is people honoring their family and these heroes, you know? But I couldn't even imagine in Chicago, you'd have some asshole tear it down. Baby killer! Some shit, you know? So it was cool to see some of that. Then we got into deeper backwoods, and there was this place in the middle of fucking nowhere that I fell in love with instantaneously, to the point that we're taking a trip up there at the end of the month. We're probably going to fly in this time because I'm not spending $1,000 on driving. Yeah, but Tyrone, Pennsylvania. Tyrone, Pennsylvania has nothing in it. And everything around it is just forests and lumber mills and shit like that. Like there's nothing but like random log cabins in the woods. And you get to this clearing and Tyrone, Pennsylvania is these old Pennsylvania homemade homes, cobblestone fucking walkways and streets, gold inlet on the sign. It looks like a slice of a New York neighborhood in the middle of nothing in Pennsylvania. It is the weirdest contrast. And so the big thing why this city exists is back in the 1900s, back in the Civil War, they used to make candy. There were a coal mining town. They used to be a hub for like all these different train systems back when the trains were still popular and in use and stuff like that. And ever since then, now they make paper, but it's really weird that in the middle of fucking nowhere is this Shangri-La pretty little village, this mini city in the middle of nothing.
And you found it out of nowhere, right?
Out of fucking nowhere. Just driving. It was at the top of a mountain, Kev.
I'm looking at the map now. I know Altoona because there's been a couple of bands who stopped in Altoona to play shows.
Okay.
So it's about 15 miles away northeast of Altoona. I'm looking at it now on a map. Yeah, no, it looks like an old, old world kind of town.
Yeah.
That we think don't exist anymore, but they probably exist almost in every state. You know, like these kind of off the beaten path.
Not so much places. In Illinois. Illinois and Indiana.
Well, not in Illinois. Yeah, probably not in Illinois. They have North Carolina. There's a lot of places like this in the Carolinas.
Okay.
In Florida, there's a lot of places like this.
Virginia too, right?
Virginia, definitely in Virginia. Yeah, but Pennsylvania. Yeah, people don't realize how big of a state Pennsylvania is. Yeah. I mean, even to go from one side of Pennsylvania, go all the way to Pittsburgh,
5 hours,
hours and hours of driving.
It's 5 hours of driving. I can tell you firsthand.
Yeah, it's a long time. Yeah, so yeah, it's a long. Like, you know, everyone thinks big states, California, Texas, New York. Yeah, Pennsylvania gets overlooked. Pennsylvania is up there with a lot of territory to cover. And when bands tour, the trek through Pennsylvania is always an adventure.
It was, dude. I had a good time, man. I had a good fucking time. I got back, obviously. I mean, there's more shit I could talk about. Everybody trying to reach me on my phone, stop. I dropped my phone. I dropped my phone in a gas station bathroom.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, on the way back, like literally on the last stretch, it was vibrating in my pocket, and I tried to pull it out mid piss, and well, that's the end of that story. So,
good luck.
Yeah, but got back for Money in the Bank. We watched it. Joe and myself did the coverage of it. It's on Patreon. I know I haven't put it up on the main feed yet, so I apologize to those people. But after Money in the Bank, we did the post-review show. I was just fucking wiped because I had just driven 24 hours in 3 days.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, you managed to pull off a show after
that. Did I say Money in the Bank? I'm sorry. Hell in a Cell. Jesus.
Hell
there you
cell,
go.
Hell in a Cell.
Fucking heck in a box.
The Money in the Bank is the next one.
Yeah, that's I'm already thinking ahead. Look at me. But yeah, I was kind of impressed with it. Like going into it, dude, I mean, even when we were talking before on Tuesday, I just had no faith in this pay-per-view. I thought maybe one or two good matches out of it, maybe.
Yeah.
And I was like, it depends on what they're going to add Friday and stuff like that. Obviously, the Sasha thing fucked a lot of the storylines up for the women.
Right.
But I was surprised. I really gave it a high grade. I gave it a B. I was really surprised by a lot of the matches and how they turned out. It wasn't bad. It genuinely wasn't bad. What did you think?
I liked it overall. Again, it was a nice surprise. I go in with low expectations, and then if it's even an average pay-per-view, I'm happy with it. But I thought it was good. I thought it was a good overall watch. Obviously, the highlight was the closer, Cody putting on a legendary performance,
yeah,
and showing a lot of guts, and man points were huge that night. And I say he definitely is etched now into WWE history as a big time baby face. Maybe not, you know, not yet of a John Cena, Hulk Hogan level, but if he comes back and you know, just keeps going the way he is, he's booked perfectly. And, you know, there was I was fighting with people. I'm not fighting, but disagreements with all these people who were so concerned for his health and safety. I think they just wanted a reason to piss on the WWE. It was up to him. Clearly, you know, and I learned a lot about pec tears. And I was talking about it on the other show that I did with Carolyn earlier, that you're not in any extreme danger of any kind of death or anything. It looks worse than it is.
Oh yeah, yeah.
From a visual sense. So all the concerned ER doctors and stuff online, i.e. people who just want a reason to condemn WWE, which gets to the point of exhaustion. I don't even hate on AEW to that point of exhaustion. I mean, WWE put him out there. He was never in danger. He never would have died. There were doctors who have come on. There's even YouTube clips of doctors saying it looks a lot worse than it is. It's bad, but he was never in danger of death whatsoever. So all these people need to shut the fuck up. Well, it's so irritating. He put on a great performance, and he is the son of Dusty Rhodes. Dusty was never out for any fucking reason, whether it was a work or a shoot injury.
Right.
Did you expect anything less from this kid? You know what I mean? Did you expect anything less? He is Rhodes.
It was good. It was,
you know, he knew he was the main event, and he knew probably that week that I better really make this last and etch myself in history in this company. So I'm going to be out about 6 months. So I think it was all a plot and plan with him in on it all the way. Not Vince saying, you got to go out there. Your father would have done it. I mean, people were just really stupid with a lot of things they were saying. It just, and he wasn't putting Seth in danger of what if he dropped Seth or whatever, but he didn't. It didn't happen.
You know what's funny about all of this, though? I mean, if any of these people would have watched Cody's Broken Skull sessions with Steve, you mm-hmm. would have known after that entire interview that this was totally Cody's move. This was completely Cody's move.
Absolutely.
And as far as talking about the, you know, the pec dangers and stuff like that, look, the reason it was so black and discolored and everything else like that is because that's what like an injury looks like. Joe brought up like a broken nose. I brought up like my broken foot and stuff like that, where the first day that we busted it, it's just a little red, and then maybe you see a slight tinge of blue, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's nothing. And then 3 or 4 days later, after the pain is gone, now your face looks like you were just hit in the head with a fucking baseball bat. So this was another one of those cases that, yeah, there was an injury underneath, but the pain wasn't anywhere near severe as the first day that it happened. So he had some time for that blood to coagulate and look like that.
Exactly. That's the whole thing. It's a visual disturbance. Like people be disturbed by the visual of it,
right?
But he wasn't, it was uncomfortable, but he was not in wincing pain where they carted him off to the emergency room after.
Right.
Again, it was calculated, and Cody knew what he was doing and knew that, you know, there's no doubt in my mind, he knew this performance, me showing up and putting on a match in this condition, I'm etching myself as a top baby face in this company. It's calculated. Yeah, yeah. And that's, again, he's Dusty's son. You know, Dusty knew how to get himself over in the NWA. Dusty was over the Road Warriors and staying at all these other guys. And look at cosmetically what Dusty looked like. But he knew how to get this. You got respect, and you mix that with sympathy, and you got a top baby face.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally agree. But, I mean, speaking back to the Broken Skull sessions, it was more than a few times that he talked about wanting to not repeat the past that he had in WWE. He pretty much buried his Stardust gimmick, and he applauded the undashing Cody Rhodes. You know, mm-hmm. he liked that side of him. And, you know, he talked about when all three of them were together, how it completed their family unit, not only inside the ring, but for the first time outside of the ring, too. And he really pushed forward the narrative that, you know, what he said when he was first coming into WWE on that Raw, when he was talking about Dusty Rhodes, you know, when he was talking about his dad, he wasn't doing that because it was scripted. He was doing that because he really right. felt that way. And if you remember that promo, he's talking about redefining himself, going to the next, being that guy. He wants to be the face of the company, like more than just a championship. And I know that he was talking about the championship a lot and stuff like that. But in Cody's mind, at least as how he explained it, is he wants to be that next Rock. He wants to be that next Stone Cold. He wants to be the next guy, Cena, who's an icon for WWE in the business. So it's like, when you look at that and you look at this guy's personal drive towards outdoing even himself, outdoing even his father, well, not showing any disrespect, you know, it kind of makes you think, well, how hard would somebody like a Vince have to push Cody in order for him to say, yeah, no problem on it. You know what I mean? Like, I do believe that Vince McMahon asked him, and probably out of, you know, concern, hey, do you think you're going to be able to do this match on Sunday? And Cody probably went, yep, no problem. I'm on it. You know what I mean? Yeah. But people want to twist that, though, Kev, and make it seem like you have to do this or you're fired.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. I mean, to combine what Ted in the chat room said along with Dale, is Cody was thinking, yes, he will be a bigger star when he returns if he puts on the performance that he did, mission accomplished. And also what Dale said is he doesn't think Cody does anything by accident. I agree. Cody's a smart business guy. He's known as one of the most intelligent guys in the business, not just in wrestling, but overall educated. Sure. And just a guy who's a real a study on things that, you know, when he wants to know about something, he goes all the way. And I think it's calculated, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, to calculate your career and figure out how you could be a bigger star and be the face of the company.
Right.
He's not manipulating anybody. It's all for him. And listen, he was bought in for this reason. He wasn't brought in just to be another guy on the card.
Right.
You know, and that's not, he's here to be a top guy. And he left AEW for that because he saw
admittedly that. Left AEW, which he called multiple times his mm-hmm. baby, his brainchild. So Cody didn't just leave another promotion. He left a promotion that he feels that he was the sole responsibility creator of, you know,
exactly.
And whether it's true or not, I'm sure there's some AEW diehards that'll say different things, but at the end of the day, that's how he feels about it. And then to sit there and really realize what that means. So you created a company and you left your company to come back to WWE because you felt that WWE was the right choice in order to further your legacy. Or further your father's legacy, further your name's legacy. You know, that's
and win the belt that eluded his father. It's a work story and a shoot story at the same time because it's true. And Dusty did always wanted to be WWF champion and never was. Whatever the reasons were, cosmetically he didn't fit the bill. Vince didn't think he was that guy.
Right.
He was the NWA champion. That was a different kind of thing.
Nick Aldis,
Rocket Promotions.
That was a big thing for him too. He did mention that with Nick Aldis, how that tied the NWA championship tied back to his father. So
sure,
he really is kind of, I mean, if you step back and look at this guy's personal career, it really is all about his legacy. Like, I don't think I've ever seen anybody as minded, you know, a second, third generation star as minded as Cody Rhodes is about what his name's value is going to be down the road, you know, no pun intended. But
yeah, again, I think there's nothing he does by accident. I think it's calculated. And I think he's one of those guys, you know, when a plan comes together, it comes together great. And it's all cylinders are firing on point for Cody, except for now this interruption and intermission because he's got and I think he'll be out as little as he, you know, if it's 3 to 6 months, it'll be 3 months for him. Look at Cena bounced back real quick.
Right.
So maybe Cody, he's only 36. And I guess they'll find that today he's having surgery, isn't he?
After Hell in a Cell, he did an interview for people. He said he explained the situation a little bit for the fans at Allstate Arena, inside the actual arena. He said, no one convinced me with a torn pec to come out here. It was solely my decision. You would have to literally kill me from staying away from this ring. 10 mm-hmm. times out of 10, I would have made the same decision. So that's what he said right after the pay-per-view. And I don't think that was a work. I think that was genuinely, once again, Cody speaking from the heart. Yeah, the actual surgery, I think that's going on. Is that going on today?
I think it's, yeah, it was supposed to be Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Thursday. Thursday's the so he's going to surgery to repair his torn pec on Thursday, June 9th. And will be out of action for a few months. The date was first reported by Sean Ross. Rhodes got injured during a weightlifting exercise, but managed to miraculously work his Hell in a Cell against Seth Rollins on Monday night or on Sunday night. So, yeah, Thursday.
Well, the other thing, Mish, like someone was saying in the chat, you know, people, Cody Rhodes is not the first person to work with a bad injury, not only in wrestling, but in sports in general. It's funny. Someone was, I can't remember who was telling me.
Joey.
Quarreling with me. No, someone online was quarreling with me. About, no, yeah, credit to Joey for saying that. But I'm saying online the other day, someone's like, if this was a boxer, they would have thrown the towel. It's wrestling. It's a performance art. Boxing is a real sport. You're getting hammered. You're getting hit in the face, right, full blast for real. No one, the referee doesn't go into another box, go easy on him. He's got a bad knee. Well, you know, dude, like no one does that.
Wrestling has done tricks like that before, though. Like with people that have actual injuries, they'll put the cast on the other leg. You know what I mean? They'll put the brace on the other leg so that they can use. Right. So everybody leaves the left leg alone, but everybody's beaten up on the right leg, even though it's the left leg that's injured, you know? And
because people are talking about nowhere in sports with that. I mean, you had to see some of the nonsense that was going on. Guys in the chat room were saying the same thing, through the nonsense they saw, you know, nowhere in sports would they let someone so badly injured go on. Does anybody remember Kirk Gibson in the 1988 World Series Dodgers? I think it was against the Athletics. He was practically hobbled going around, and they made him get up and he got a, you know, at bat and stuff. Again, there's been epic moments of people who were kind of running on half fumes or injured, whether it was a leg injury or arm injury, and they performed.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole point of it. You know, again, if it's a life-threatening injury, if his life, they wouldn't have let him perform. Oh, WWE again being reckless, showing no care for the health and well-being. Listen, if you hate the WWE so much and you want to go with this narrative instead of go with the, boy, did Cody, what a man for doing that. That's right. The narrative most of us are going with. If you want to go with Vince McMahon should be arrested for almost killing Cody Rhodes, do that. That's your thing to do. I don't know how you sucker people into believing you, but I just found this so ridiculous. I'm like, it's just always going to be an us versus them thing in wrestling, isn't it? It's just always going to be.
Yeah.
It's never going to change. It's never going to change.
It's always going to, well, WWE has a lifetime of haters, man. There's a lot of people that pretty much grew
fallen,
up
fallen WWE fans, really, oh, yeah, what usually. They are. It's like guys who used to be on the team and then, you know, just look back at their years on the team. It's just nothing but misery.
Yeah. We can move on to Raw. There's a couple of things that took place during Raw. I guess the biggest one to talk about is after a successful evening the day before, at Hex in a Box, Judgment Day, Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley turned on Edge and brought in Finn Balor as the new leader of the group. Now, I saw a little bit about what Joey said to me in private about how he feels about it, and I'm very curious your thoughts on the matter.
I'm not sure what there was, you know, the Fightful released something yesterday, I believe, and I, you know, went back and forth with a couple of people on it because I don't have faith in everything Fightful or Ringside News or anybody says, because it's word is this and that. Edge didn't sit down and do an interview. The same word is Edge didn't like that it was going the supernatural route, so they kicked him out of the group. I don't believe that. I think there's something more to it. I think the Cody injury, they didn't need another big baby face. It wasn't clicking. I'm an Edge fan, okay? I'm a big Edge guy. I have to admit that it wasn't over when the crowd was coming out. I liked it. I liked the gimmick. I liked the music. I liked the new music, the theme, the more heavy metal kind of dark tune that he was coming out to. But fans weren't really responding. I mean, I'll admit when my favorites don't get a reaction, I'll admit it. And he wasn't getting much of a reaction. They were kind of ho-hum. I like Damian Priest too. I'm a fan. No real reaction, even when they were browbeating the crowd and calling them lowlifes and, you know, low IQ and stuff. It was tepid boos. It wasn't anything crazy. And Rhea Ripley was cool when she got in, and here we are 3 weeks later, and it's really a whole lot of nothing. I don't think the faction was getting over that much. Cody gets hurt. Maybe Edge is better off as a baby face. People weren't really buying it, Mish. I don't think it was working, and I think Edge came up with the idea, maybe have them jump me, bring Finn in. He needs a turn. Edge doesn't need the rub. Edge is there as a utility guy to do what they need him to do. He doesn't need a championship belt. He doesn't need to be a focal point. I'm not sure. I don't buy it, though, that Edge is like, we're going too supernatural for me. I don't like this. Take me out of the group. I don't believe that. I don't believe the Pfeiffer report. I am telling you right now, I don't believe it.
I don't either.
I don't think the group was getting over, and WWE doesn't give people a long time to really look how they pulled the plug on Cross, really. I mean, they don't really give things that much time anymore, Mish, before they either fully alter it or completely kill it.
Well, and
but
also,
I don't like Finn as the, I don't, I'll finish this up. I don't like Finn as the lead guy because he's not a great talker unless he comes out and does something really different. And by the way, I'm not convinced that Damian Priest isn't the new leader, by the way. I don't think Finn is necessarily the leader, but I there's something more to it than Edge not liking the supernatural aspect. I don't buy it.
I agree with you. The supernatural excuse feels like it's people coping with this change and trying to come up with an idea of why in the world would they kick Edge out. Now, I was actually positive to Edge being in this group because of the reason that I felt he was the overseer of young talent. There's nothing wrong with Edge, an accomplished guy, many years, you know, in wrestling and WWE, and a decent talker, a decent enough talker to be the guy who is almost like the big boss for this group. And that's kind of the way I saw it, was here was an older guy who has younger talent fighting his wars for him. But at the same time, I agree with you. There was something that was lacking and lackluster about it. Edge being replaced by Finn Balor. Now, I understand where you're saying that Damian Priest could be the leader and stuff like that. I think they're going to rely on Finn Balor. And there's a few reasons behind that. One is Finn Balor is a younger guy. He's not too young where you would consider him inexperienced in any way, but he's definitely got a lot longer of a shelf life than Edge does as far as in ring. And oh, we sure, also absolutely. Don't. And one thing that we also didn't talk about was after that match, man, after that Judgment Day match against Bullet Club, wasn't it funny how fast this turned around in a night after having them win? So I'm wondering, and I'm not going to say that Edge is injured, but maybe he's feeling his age. Maybe Edge was out there having that match, that fast-paced six-person match, and went, ugh, I can't do this right now. I can't do this.
Yeah,
I need
a break. He's going to be 50. Yeah.
Right, but people don't take that into account. So that's one of the thoughts that I had, and obviously Finn Balor being younger. Second, people forget Finn Balor is the sole creator of Bullet Club. He was a guy who got a gimmick over in Japan that kind of spread out all over the place, obviously with Omega and, you know, Young Bucks and everybody else underneath the sun that became a part of it. Cody became a part of it and stuff like that. But the Bullet Club itself was Finn Balor's idea. It was his creation. He was considered the original. And I'm wondering if WWE knows that. Of course they do. But I wonder if they want to utilize his ability that he did in Japan and bring that here into WWE.
It's possible. Again, until I really hear Edge do an interview or he does some sort of candid thing, I just don't. The whole supernatural thing, Edge was part of the Brood, for God's sakes. You know what I'm saying? So what was it? He was part of the ministry. So what, why doesn't he all of a sudden doesn't like Supernatural? Undertaker's
I think
one
you're taking
wrestlers.
That to heart. I really think that that's just somebody throwing shit out in the
fucking air. But I'm Fightful reported and everyone was sharing it. Go see, it was creative why Edge wanted out of the group. I'm like, I don't think he wanted out of the group. I think it was his idea to take himself out of the group to spotlight these guys more because he doesn't need it. And you're right. He's probably feeling his age and maybe he was. Listen, I'll be more of a utility player. I don't need to have the belt. I'm here, you know, to do what you need me to do. I mean, he's making $2 million a year.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't think Edge is he's already in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
So,
right.
Like, what is he's. You know, he's the fucking, Craig Biggio of wrestling. He's all decorated. He's been to the All-Star game many times already.
Anna says, Finn is crap at promos. He's never been a dark heel, unless maybe as the demon. Priest has more of the dark leader look. It won't work unless Finn is the demon. He's basically a pretty boy heel in a dark faction. Now, you have to sidestep this for a second and realize the ego of WWE creative. I know what Anna is trying to say. Anna is right. Finn has not been this charismatic guy. You know, he hasn't really taken the world by storm when it comes to promos. No, but the ego of WWE is this guy was popular somewhere else. We have the tools. We can make him better than anybody's ever seen before. Yeah. And in order for a company to be successful, you have to keep that mindset where it's almost optimism over realism. I'd like to believe that Finn Balor can excel with a new Bullet Club, even if it's a darker take or even a supernatural take on it. I'd like to believe that he could excel and do what he did overseas, but I don't know. I genuinely don't know. And I, as much as I love Damian Priest, I kind of don't want him to be the leader. And I'll explain, I guess the best way to say it is he's the smart number two. There's going to be, if the idea is that Finn is going to be leading another group, I have no doubt in my mind that there's going to be new members now. None. Like before with Edge, I was like, oh, maybe there will be a new member. Maybe there won't be. But now that Finn is in control, I have no doubt in my mind that they're going to add new people. And if that's the case. Well, I think
Ciampa fits in a lot better now with Finn as with Finn in there now. It becomes more of an NXT homegrown thing.
Damian Priest will definitely be taking on the number two position. He's going to be the smart underling, which also leaves it open down the road because we know how charismatic Damian Priest is for the day that he wants to take out Finn Balor. Almost like a Nation of Damon, Nation of Domination and of the Rocky Maivia role. So I'm not saying that Damian Priest is Rocky Maivia, but you can start putting your own pieces together of wrestling angles past and draw your own conclusions. So as far as this new stable, this new Judgment Day, first thing they need to do, at least in my opinion, get rid of that fucking awful name. Please change it to anything else. Judgment Day is a fucking event, not the name of a stable.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like the music, though. Do you like the theme?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, all the tools that they've been given, like the lighting, the mood music, the fucking the themes and stuff like that, the positioning, you know, yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. They almost come out like a supernatural shield. You know, there's three of them around the ring. You know what I mean? Like, even the way they stand in the ring is like Seth and fucking Roman and Moxley, you know?
I like the Saints of Fate. I like that name. That's a good name.
That would work.
Saints of Fate. Yeah, SOF.
But I'm kind of
that would be cool too. Yeah. And Finn's got to lose the tiny shorts thing. He's got to maybe go with a different look.
He will. Oh, dude, yeah. They changed Rhea. They changed Priest. There's no way they're just going to let Finn come out there in his fucking CK gear. No.
Seriously. He's got to lose that.
Yeah, for sure.
It's time to put pants on.
Time to put on the big boy pants. But I'm looking forward to pants. That.
There you go.
You know,
we got Rhea Ripley now with her ass cheeks hanging out, which I'm not hating.
Yeah, no, she's been changing too. She's showing off more skin. She's showing off her fucking ink, which, you know, everybody's like, oh, I've seen her ink 1,000 times. I'm like, oh, I don't know.
I didn't know she had tattoos on her
thighs. That's what I was saying, too. And people were correcting me like I was some kind of an asshole. And I was like, I don't know, dude. I didn't realize her ink. I'm usually an ass man myself. Yeah. I kind of notice these things, but yeah, never real. It looks good. It looks good. It, you know, speaking of changes, June 27th, WWE has announced the return of John Cena. Coming back to Laredo, Texas. So it's to cap off the Cena month 20-year celebration, celebrating 20 years of John Cena in WWE. I'm curious, does this lead to anything or is this just a celebratory event?
Probably a celebratory event. I mean, yesterday they posted that thing to kind of show people, you know, John Cena's worth and value and humanity outside of wrestling, that thing where he went to visit that special needs kid from Ukraine. And he happened to be, I guess, in Amsterdam, and he actually took an hour flight and drove a few hours out of his way. And they put like a nice 5-minute clip up there of him spending the day with the kid and his family. It just kind of shows you the kind of guy John Cena is. Still the biggest Make-A-Wish requested celebrity there is. even though he's more of a TV star now than he is a wrestling star. And that was really nice. And again, you can't even be cynical about stuff like that. And you even see people like, I never liked Cena, but this is really cool.
Right.
Yeah. That's why WWE put it there. And I don't think it's to show a reminder, John Cena is not a bad guy. Everybody kind of knew that already. But when you put that up there, it makes you want to see him back. And you're kind of like, sometimes as things go on, even, you know, I had players I didn't like on certain baseball teams or certain seasons. Then when they come back for old timers day, whatever, I'm like, I'm not such a bad guy. I guess, you know, there was a time where I didn't care. Wasn't one of my favorite players, but he was an important player.
Right.
And that's the way you got to look at John Cena, where I'm sure even everyone in the chat here, I don't know if anybody would name Cena in their top five or top 10 as far as their favorites, but they will probably say, you know, I don't mind seeing the guy back. I hear the music, the crowd goes crazy. It's kind of infectious. You know, I mean, he's one of those guys. He is a Mount Rushmore guy. Austin, Rock, Cena's up there. You can make an argument that he deserves to be there over guys like Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. If you're going by what he bought and money that he bought into the company and value, he's got a nice, that show that he does now is fantastic. He's transitioned into Hollywood just as good as Rock, in my opinion. Some people say he's a better actor than Rock. So Cena's a big star, and I think wrestling fans, they're proud of The Rock. They should be proud of Cena, too, of what he's done outside of the business. He's a real positive success story for wrestling. Guy you can point to and not be embarrassed by.
He was doing
like Hogan or Flair, by the way.
Yeah. He was doing a Q&A session with TikTok, and somebody asked him, who his current favorite WWE superstar was? And he said Theory. And then Theory responded saying, stop playing dress up and then do something then. So I can see that there being some kind of an altercation between the two. I think that that might be a little bit fun. And you know what? It's right in the wheelhouse of something John Cena would do, passing over the torch to someone else. And Theory, you know, I don't know how you feel about Theory, but I like the dude. I think the guy's very charismatic.
He's
good in the ring. He doesn't feel like a klutz. He really is a blue chipper. I can't really see too many flaws in what Theory is bringing right now. Like, he's not there yet, I guess, is the only thing I can really say. But Jesus, he's so fucking new. You know what I mean? I'm going to give him a few years as long as nothing horrible happens, you know, knock on wood. You know, I think Theory is going to be the next major star that comes out of WWE.
I'll give props to Gabe Sapolsky, who was putting this guy over years ago on the Independence when he was just came into Evolve, I guess, 5 years ago, maybe. Mm-hmm. And just saying this guy's going to be, and you'll hear that. And Mitch, we could be cynical too. How many people do we hear?
Sure.
It's going to be this, going to be that.
Many.
But Theory's got, God, he's got, I guess he is a little bit of a Cena. I'd throw a little bit of a young Buff Bagwell in there with him too, from the look and the arrogance. But I think also I could see Austin Theory being a big baby face down the line.
Yeah.
Down the line.
When
I first saw Cena with Thuganomics, I didn't think that Cena could be a baby face like that first year with B Squared and him always starting with Eddie Guerrero and always, you know, coming out to humiliate the big baby faces. But again, when the cheers start happening, you never really know when fans really catch on to this guy. He might be a babyface sooner than later, but right now his heel run is really good. And yes, he is one of, I would say, along with Bron Breakker, and I would say a little too early, but I'm going to throw, what's his name in there too, Madcap Moss, as three youngsters who to look. There's something with these guys. There's something on the on
you,
the
you
on
had the me till you said guys. Madcap. I don't see it with Madcap.
No, not as Madcap, but Riddick Moss could be something. I think he could be something. You know,
I'm with Lee on Omos. I think Omos is a guy they just gotta get rid of the fucking filth that's surrounding him. And I mean, like, stop having him do anything that doesn't resemble big man moves. I think they did a good job on Monday. I thought Monday that 2 second match was fantastic. The problem with Omasa was on Sunday, he did a lot of stop and start, like when he was charging into Bobby Lashley.
Yeah, he's still
nervous. I don't know if that's the case. Maybe I know, but you never know how somebody's actually where they're
and
at.
He had
a full year
around AJ Styles.
Yeah,
you would think he would have learned some stuff.
Well, he did because he's not horrible. Like, looking at him out there, he has the understanding of what his character is. We've seen other big guys that are complete jokes. Look at Shanky. Look at what the fuck they got Shanky doing. Shanky's a 7-foot dude dancing out there.
He's not really that good of a dancer, I'll be honest with you.
He's not good of a wrestler.
He's dancing with Ricochet's girl.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. It's like, you got a 7-foot guy and they can't think of anything to do for this guy other than dance. At least Omos, when he comes out there, he looks like a fucking killer.
Look at the clip Phil the promoter put on him, Shanky hitting the guy in the head.
That's so awful.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's pretty horrible. But let's be honest, Mish. You know, we talk about the bus flip, and I give you, Joey, the credit for coining the term that everybody uses now. Because I never heard anybody in our community say that before you guys did years ago. I think Shanky's on the next bus. Don't see, you know, like Meg, there's guys who they're going to stick with. But at least they're getting some TV time and trying with some of these guys. They didn't even try with other people.
Right.
And by the way, I would put Carmelo Hayes, Nier said that. I would put him as one of the big stars in the future. He reminds me of a young AJ Styles.
Yeah. I actually Carmelo want Santos to succeed. I feel like, not really delving too much into NXT, but it almost feels like the fire has been pulled out from Legado del Fantasma so much. Santos, he's still a huge star, but I don't know. It feels like it's already fading out, and it's like, man, this guy is so talented. Please don't get rid of him.
He's got to be an Italian now. I think he's got to change.
Oh, is that what he's going to do? He's going to go with
the Italians. Tony Dunn. They got to join the Italian gang. Yeah.
Gross.
that'll be a great visual to show the Italians making them take pizza out and stuff. The Latin guys. That should be interesting. Yeah, that was the whole thing. It's one gang wins, you have to join the other gang. Right. So now they're part of the Italians.
Real quick, two notes to point out. CM Punk was injured and Daniel Bryan was injured on Rampage. He was supposed to be – CM Punk was scheduled, but he announced that he's injured and has to undergo surgery.
Broken foot.
Yeah. They didn't say when the surgery is taken. I'm sorry, they didn't announce when the surgery was going to take place, and it's unclear when he got the injury specified. But,
CM Punk got the injury jumping into the crowd and banging his foot on the rail.
Oh, is that what it's?
Yeah, that's what it is. He jumped in the crowd and banged his foot on the top rail, smashed his foot.
Jesus.
That's what happened, yeah. Right. So he did that on his own. He did it to himself. It was a kind of a stupid accident.
Everybody's kind of hurting themselves. Yeah, Cody Rhodes hurt it weightlifting.
Yep.
You know, Bryan Danielson is also injured. Sean Ross is saying that he had to miss out on a meet and greet in Mass and was not able to fly due to his injury. No information was given as to what the injury was, the injury is. But usually being unable to fly relates to head injuries. So obviously Danielson has a long, long history of concussions from his WWE days and has been pretty much working nonstop in AEW since last year. God, I hope that's not the case. Of all the people, Danielson does not need another concussion. You know?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. To have him and Punk out at the same time, I mean, that sucks for them.
Yeah. No. So definitely wanted to throw that out there. So yeah, three big guys fucking all injured. No news on Sasha Banks or Naomi.
At least it's been quiet.
I'm kind of surprised. And it's been quiet from them too, because they haven't said anything, I don't think, on social media. I haven't seen anything either. So,
nothing
from Bray Wyatt. Nothing from Bray Wyatt. Everybody thought Bray Wyatt was going to show up at Heck in a Box, and that didn't.
I did think he was going to be there, and I thought he might even been on Monday Night Raw. You know, so but because he's posting the cryptic soon, and I think he is coming back to WWE. That I'll stick to my guns on. I may not know when he's going to. Just guesstimations from all of us of when he's going to appear, but I don't believe he's going to AEW. I believe he's going back to WWE.
Miz and Mrs. debuted their season 3. I don't know if you got a chance to watch it.
Yes. I watched the full hour. I was hoping there would be that Maurice would want to go for a swim at one point, but unfortunately she didn't.
Jesus. But, but didn't you get your fill on Monday night when she came out there? Holy fuck, dude. I was
that dress. Oh yeah.
God, I was more impressed with the tape she was using to keep him in, because
Oh, there's a picture of Phil posted.
Yeah, I was waiting for them to fly out.
Insane.
I was waiting for them to fly out to the point that I was fast forwarding when Tink was around.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, dude, that was Jesus Christ.
What a woman.
What is she, 40 now and she looks like that?
Oh, she's got to be at least. And yeah, no, I watch. I mean, they're up to the, obviously when he was on Dancing with the Stars, they started out with, and he had already finished his first dance and whatever. His father was betting that he'd be eliminated.
Oh, that was hilarious.
That was pretty funny. His father's like, but you're going to be eliminated right off the bat. And that his father never has faith in him. It's pretty funny.
But I think that that's his tough love though, too.
Yeah.
Like his father's kind of a doom-de-doom, right? Like we all get,
he's a total doom-de-doom.
Yeah. Right. But his whole thing is just being negative to his son. So his son can prove him wrong at every chance, you know? And the mom wasn't there, Marjo. They kicked her out. They got her own place too.
They're all the parents are gone now. They all got their own places. Yeah, I mean, I always found that weird that they all lived in the same house.
I thought they did that for the show. I didn't realize that she was there with them for fucking over 8 years.
Oh no, yeah, they lived a real life. It wasn't for the cameras. And same thing with the father. He was in and out of there, living there all the time.
And
my Miz has plenty of money. I mean that.
Right.
You know, and I understand the father has plenty of money from the stores. He owned a couple of fast food joints that he sold, and he's pretty much retired. So the father's not relying on Mike for money.
No. But it was always weird because I always thought that, you know, they had Mrs. Mom and Dad in the house. His mom was pretty much nursing the babies when they were young, because I think she was by herself before then. And she came into the show when Maurice got pregnant. I was like, oh, okay. Like, that's part of the show. But the dad and Marjo were always kind of around. And I was like, oh, well, because even before they did the move, they were around. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. I didn't realize they were with him for 8 fucking years. Man, could you imagine your parents and your girl's parents living with you for 8 fucking years?
No.
Holy shit. I'm like, no wonder they made your life into a reality series. I mean, you talk about the crazy cast of characters in there, so.
Yeah, it's a fun show. I enjoyed watching. I watched some back episodes on Hulu a while ago just to catch up a little bit because I didn't see everything. But I could picture people getting into that show and doing a little marathon watch. Again, it's nothing great. It's something fun to watch, even if you're not a wrestling fan. And I believe those two are a legit couple. It's not just for the cameras. They got a pretty solid marriage, so I can respect that. It's not a typical wrestling celebrity marriage.
Well, the other wrestling reality shows have all kind of bombed anyways. You know, like the Total Divas, Total Bellas, that's all pretty much dead and gone anyways, you know.
That I don't want to see anymore. But yeah, this show is, you know, it's a fun watch. And I'll be honest with you, I enjoyed the hour of that more than I enjoyed most of Raw.
Yeah. I mean, other than that on Raw, I'm trying to think of what else happened.
Becky's going for the 24/7 title now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. She can't even beat Dana Brooke.
What else did they have going on?
It's Bliss. Part of the downfall of Becky Lynch.
Yeah, Bliss. Bliss was out there wrestling. What was it? That four-way. Well,
she was in the match with Liv Morgan and the four-way. Dewdrop
and Ray Liotta. Ray Ripley. So,
did you call it Ray Lee Morgan?
No, I called her Ray Liotta.
Oh, Ray Liotta.
Because let's I was looking
Ray Liotta.
I was just checking, and I hit my email real quick, and Baseball Chickie emailed me the episode Ray Liotta.
Ray Liotta. Okay.
Not just Goodfellas, and I was trying to say Rhea Ripley, but my brain saw Ray Liotta, and anyways.
Well, it's funny to see Alexa Bliss and Liv Morgan face off. It was like looking in a mirror in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
To very same size. I mean, they don't literally look exactly alike, but kind of similar characters. They both have a little Harley Quinn thing going on there. So it's kind of almost like a dream match for these two to face off.
Maybe. You know? I was actually more interested in Ripley and Dewdrop going at it because that was like a flashback to the NXT UK.
Yeah, that's another one. Yeah, but like I said, when I remember when they went face to face, crowd kind of was It's almost like Hogan and Warrior. I was like, it's a little Miss Bliss and little Liv Morgan, you know? But Liv Morgan cries a lot more than Alexa Bliss does.
Yes, yes.
It's a porn dream match, Nero said.
Pretty much.
It's probably, you know, the younger fans were probably chomping at the bit to see this.
I bet they were. But other than that, I think that pretty much covers everything. You know, no real backlash from the MJF promo from Wednesday. Actually, I didn't even get a chance to talk to you about that. What did you think about the whole promo?
I love the promo, but I'm still confused if again, call me naive, but I don't know if this is real or not real. I harken back to the Pillman days where very few people were in on it except for a few people. But it was interesting that something, I don't know if it was Cornette or what Bischoff said, all that Pillman did back then, by the way, you know that it generated no money, that the ratings weren't better during his segments. He didn't sell more merch because of it. So Pillman was kind of ahead of his time. Like it didn't really amount. And then Pillman was in the car accident, you know, and then had the bad foot and then died not too long after that. Didn't really get to have that big thing with Steve Austin because he was wrestling half-assed. So Pillman kind of, you know, during his day, my God, he would have loved to have been a healthy Pillman. What could have happened? Because MJF thing to me echoes more the Pillman thing than it does CM Punk. The pipe bomb was calm. CM Punk was sitting on the ramp, just talking, never really screaming or yelling. And it was kind of monotone. The MJF thing was this intense, like he was losing his mind kind of thing, dropping curse words. It reminded me of the Pillman promo in ECW when Pillman showed up with the cane and was going to whip his dick out on Joey Styles. Yeah. That's what it reminded me of. Everyone's like, CM Punk. I'm like, learn wrestling history. It was a complete copy of Brian Pillman, CM Punk. Everything's CM Punk with AEW fans. Like, there's no history before CM Punk. But I don't know what's going on here because he was taken off of certain things. His merch was pulled.
Yes.
Is TBS and TNT in on a work? I don't understand what's going on here. I really don't. I'm going to watch tonight because I want to understand more of what's going on here. And now it's CM Punk out. Is MJF... is this a full, is it a shoot? Is it a work? Did he work things out with MJF behind the scenes? Was he really wanting to go to WWE and now he doesn't? I don't know where this, and I guess that's part of the intrigue is that we don't know. But what do you think, Mish, as we stand right now, MJF is just, everything is a work or it was a shoot and then they just, Tony had a meeting with him and they turned it around.
It's a work.
Something like that?
It's a complete work. I mean, when me and Joey did the deep dive on the,
I just don't know.
The very first thing he said is he was hurting from the night before when he was talking about the match that he had with Wardlow. And I'm like, okay, this is all work. Them pulling his stuff off the website and everything else like that. If you don't know who MJF is in AEW, you know what I mean? Like finding him randomly on the roster page isn't going to help you. Right. I think that it's part of the company turning this into part of this shoot work angle that they have going on. But yeah, it's a complete work. TBS. I mean, obviously they know what's going on. But
I don't believe that it's a work that MJF was pissed off to know that Billy Fish, Kyle O'Reilly and Jack Swagger make a lot more money than he does. I don't think that was a work. I would be pissed off too. Why is Billy Fish making more money than MJF?
Well,
because he was an NXT guy.
You're right about that, but I think that this entire thing is MJF proving that he's worth as much as he wants. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like if you work at a job and three other people that may have been around as long as you have, maybe not, are making more money than you, and you go to your boss and you say, I hear that my other, you know, my coworkers are making more money than me. Why is that? And then your boss will tell you, well, we don't think you're worth it. Which could very well be, I mean, it would be a horrible thing for Tony Khan to say because clearly he is. Or they would be like, you know, well, this is because this is the deal that they worked out. And then your response would be in that scenario, well, then what do I do to make more money than them? And usually the universal response is show us, prove it to us. Prove it to us that you can draw in this kind of money, that you're worth the money that you're asking for. And so this whole thing, I have almost no doubt in my mind that MJF is in control of a lot of the creative direction of his entire gimmick going on right now, as well as with AEW, and that this is MJF's way to make himself invaluable, you know, or valuable to the company. He's making himself a permanent spot by doing this, because you're right. When you want to talk about the intrigue, when you want to talk about the draw and stuff like that, MJF is the draw. MJF was the draw for that whole pay-per-view. MJF right now is the most important name that anybody's talking about in that entire company, even more than Tony Khan, even more than CM Punk, even more than Bryan Danielson, even more than a lot of guys. MJF is the guy who's clearly causing enough waves that people outside of AEW are paying close attention. So do I think that this contract dispute and all that, is that real? Yes and no. I'm sure it was a real concern for him as far as these guys got paid more than me, but I don't think it was fuck the world, burn the bridges, burn the city down, you know, like he's kind of showing in his promos that he's this angry. I don't believe any of that. That's not real. The promo isn't real. You know, were there feelings that he used because of the contract dispute? Sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure he believes Tony Khan's a fucking mark.
Right. Of course he is. And being told you're making less money. Yeah, of course you can draw from that feeling. You know, I'm sure outside of the storyline, everybody has a story where they've been passed over. Everybody has a story where they've been disrespected. And this is kind of that case. He's using real life, you know, art imitating real life is what it is.
Right. And also, by the way, I called him Billy Fish on purpose. Billy Fish is the name of a character in Streets of Fire. Rick Moranis played Billy Fish in Streets of Fire. So it's not important enough to get his name right.
I thought you were saying Buddy Murphy. So
No. Billy Fish is the name of a character in a movie. Yeah. But the fact that, again, Kyle O'Reilly making more money than MJF. But MJF, Darby Allin, and Jungle Boy, I almost called him Jungle Rot after the Chicago death metal band. Jungle Rod, and all those guys, you know, came in not as big stars, but as indie guys. So they probably signed a 3-year deal that probably expires soon.
Yeah.
For probably not much money, you know, just to get an opportunity, you know. So right. I never bought the narrative that Luchasaurus was making more money than Dolph Ziggler. I never bought that. I know those guys are only making, and listen, even making $100,000 a year is not a bad piece of change. AEW doesn't tour as much, obviously, as WWE doesn't have as much demand on the time of their performers as WWE. But anybody who thought like Darby Allin was making $1 million a year, he might make $150,000 a year. I mean, again,
I would be surprised though. You're right. When you're talking about the longer contracts, I wouldn't be surprised that when Jungle Boy was signed, he was signed to a very lucrative deal, which he didn't back up back when his daddy was still alive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
His father's got money and he's got a lot of money from his dad.
Right. But I mean, I can't imagine what his is. I guarantee you it's a high six figure. And it's like, do you think that he's a guy that even draws half of that? You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying is I think that there was a lot of mistakes made contractually in the early days of AEW, not necessarily because they were like fucking up on purpose, not because Tony Khan was fucking up on purpose, but he had nothing to base what these contracts were valuable at. Like as far as going based upon other indie promotions and stuff like that. Yeah. But he didn't do that. From what we understood, Tony Khan was signing people to deals way outside their wheelhouse. So it was kind of like, well, why in the hell would anybody, you know, go work for smaller indie promotions when here's Tony Khan, the money mark, that's given people four times what they're worth,
he didn't do that with a lot of the younger talent who might be getting over now, but they signed 3 or 5 year deals at a certain amount. And again, like Penelope Ford and Kip Sabian, you think they're making more than $150,000 a year? I highly doubt it.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I highly doubt it. And someone actually laughed at me who's in the industry when I said, you think some of these people are making $500,000 a year? And he wrote, ha, 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 are you kidding? And that's someone in the industry, no names mentioned.
Right.
I think that's overblown. Also said to me, wrestling, the performance, it's also the performance of what the fans think that's actually happening behind the scenes is as entertaining as what we do in the ring. So that's another pretty funny quote, which is true because we don't know. A lot of things are guesstimations. Just we talked about it before.
Yeah.
Edge left because of this and that.
Right,
is that facts? Right. Well, it's not facts, Kev, but everyone's saying it. That doesn't make it true.
No, you're right.
You know, that's what I'm saying. I guess also just being a fan for so many years, 43 years now consistently, And not being so preoccupied with rumor, even though I was getting the dirt sheets in the 80s, me and Draper were getting the Observer and Torch back in the 80s, getting it through the mail every week, looking forward to reading it. But even certain things we would even question as teenagers, like, oh, you think that's true? Like, and some would prove to be true and some would prove to be false. But I think that's anything. I think, isn't it a 50-50 shot when any rumor comes down the line?
Well, here's the thing is, I'm not necessarily drawing my information based upon like dirt sheets and stuff like that. I'm taking it directly from Tony Khan. Tony right. Khan talks about what a big spender he is. Tony Khan talks about how much he pays people. He doesn't necessarily give out, you know, millions, and he doesn't give out the actual numbers and stuff like that.
Yeah, we don't know the actual numbers. That's the thing. Even CM Punk, we really don't know what he makes.
Right. But what I'm saying is, like, this is all based upon some of the shit that he says. And he's so untrustworthy. He may as well be a walking, talking fucking dirt sheet himself.
That's you know? True. That's a good point. Yeah.
So it's you're right. It is a guesstimation. The guesstimation that I'm using is based upon Tony Khan's information. And who the fuck knows if he's telling the truth. He's lied to us before. He'll lie to us again. That's just what the guy does.
And after that scrum,
yeah,
I don't know if he remembers being there.
Yeah, he's taking shit that makes him think he's paying these people that kind of money. So who knows, man?
Is cocaine a truth serum, Mish? On that note,
it gets you to do some other thing. Anyways, much love to everybody. Thank you very much for sitting in on the Tuesday afternoon show. Much love, yes. Kev. Thanks for coming back and doing the show.
Good time as always, man. Look forward to next week.
Yeah, man. And we'll be here next week. We'll be here on Thursday with myself and Joey. And then I think we'll have a Frank and Gus later on this week as well. So nice. Much love to Julian Cannon and much love to Lee Sanders again from the RCWR show for having
go
me
prop
with
that
them.
Picture. It's a great picture. I can't endorse it anymore.
For having me at AwesomeCon, I really appreciate that, guys. And I'll put up the episode, too, on the feed as well. So I'm going to get to that later on today as well. So much love to everybody. We will talk to you soon. Peace.
Peace.
Wrestling Soup.
Hey.
Would like to thank you.
Thank you.
For listening to tonight's show.
That's right.
But to those of you that hate us, we know who.
Yeah, we know you.
There's one thing you can do. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, that's right.
Go
that's
fuck
right.
yourself.
Screw you. Yeah, screw you. You and you and